recorded live.
This is my destiny. Someone rescue me. How can I change the path that I'm on? Bring it all back to me. Life is sweet and the moment is long. Yeah, this is my attention. Hear me now. Waking up the institution.
This is the Patriot Dames Radio Show. Susie, Barbie, and yours truly, Keith, will bring you the show every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Patriot Dames' purpose is to save this great nation from the grips of communism and all the other isms that threaten this great nation. And now, the Patriot Dames.
Thunders mutter, northern flags and south winds flutter. To arms,
to arms,
to arms, send them back your fierce defiance, stamp upon the cursed alliance. To arms,
to
arms, to arms,
advance the flag of Dixie. Hurrah, hurrah, for Dixie's land we take our stand, and live or die for Dixie.
To arms,
to arms, and conquer peace for Dixie.
You are,
and conquer peace for Dixie.
Fear no danger, shun no labor, lift up rifle, pike, and saber. To arms,
to
arms,
to arms,
in Dixie. Shoulder pressing close to shoulder, let the odds make each heart bolder. To arms,
to
arms,
to arms,
in
Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hurrah, hurrah, for Dixie's land we take our stand, and live or die for Dixie.
To arms,
to arms, and conquer peace for Dixie.
To arms,
to
arms,
and conquer peace for Dixie.
On your country's altar, never to submit or falter. To arms,
to
arms,
to
arms,
in Dixie.
Till the spoilers are defeated, till the Lord's work is completed. To arms,
to
arms, to
arms, in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hurrah, hurrah, for Dixie's land. And we take our stand and live or die for Dixie.
Hello, America. This is Susie of the Patriot Dames. Today is Thursday, April 15th, 2010. And what's kind of good about doing this show on the Civil War with Mark Weber tonight is that April is the month that the Civil War started, and it's the month that the Civil War ended. It started in 1861, and it ended in 1865. And that's what Mark is going to tell us about. Now, I did a little research. I like to do a short introduction before I introduce Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review, who's been with us many times. He's been on other people's shows. I don't know how he has the time to run his website, ihr.org, or come on my show or come on other people's shows, but he's adamant to get the true history out there, and that's what we're going to talk about today. 600,000 men died during the Civil War. Now, at the time, that was just about the population of North Carolina. North Carolina was just a little over 600,000. And Lincoln was the president. But did you know that there was another United States president at the same time? And Mark Weber will talk about that. Now, the population of the United States in 1860 was 31,443,321. Out of that 31 million, 3,953,761 were slaves. So that means about 27 million were not slaves. So 27 million. And how many people do we have in the United States today? 300 and something million in the United States? Yeah, Institute for Historical Review. Now, just to let you know how many states had the most amount of people, the people that had about a million or more were Massachusetts, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, and Virginia. They had about 1 million. New York had 3 million, almost four. Ohio had 2 million, but almost 2.5 million. And Nevada had, are you ready for this? 6,857 people in the whole state of Nevada. So without further ado, so we can talk about the Civil War, I'd like to introduce to you Mark Weber. How are you tonight?
Very good, Susie. It's great to be with you. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate very much that you've had me on several times, and I'm glad to be on with you again this evening.
Well, this is a very important subject because people that have known this was coming up have asked that you compare it to other wars, but I think in the end that you'll do that. And as I brushed up on the Civil War, I found also things that were happening that should have stopped, and they didn't stop. And finally, it just got so bad. It's just like you make a bad decision, you don't correct it, it compounds itself, it gets worse, and the next thing you know, that there's a war. So let me ask you, are civil wars in other nations like the one we had in the United States?
Well, yes and no. First of all, you know, in the South, it's not called, or traditionally, it's not even called the Civil War. Normally, a civil war is a conflict between two sides trying to get control of the same country. That's why the Southerners often call it the war between the states, because the South wasn't trying to get control of the whole United States. They were trying to break away from the United States. So strictly speaking, it's not a civil war in the way that normally we think of the English Civil War or the Spanish Civil War or other conflicts that are called a civil war. It was a conflict between two sides, the South trying to attain its independence from the United States of America. Now, having said that, this war was by far and way far more destructive of human life, cost more lives, American lives, than all the other wars America's ever been in. In fact, it was cost more lives than American lives than World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War put together. To put it in perspective, there were more than 500,000 Americans who lost their lives in the American Civil War. More than 500,000, 500,000, 600,000. The Iraq War, which of course got a lot of attention, took about 3,000 American lives. That's a big difference. Half a million compared to 300,000. Mm-hmm. Big difference. And again, the American Civil War took more American lives by far than even World War II did, or World War I combined, those wars put together. Mm. Now, some of the civil wars are often the most bitter because they're fighting for, you might say, their very existence or their very identity. Unlike other wars where one side or another can and often do, they just decide, well, we're going to end it, and then they give up, and then things go back to the way they were. Civil wars are much more categorical. They're for everything. Now, that's why the Spanish Civil War of 1936 to 1939 was another very, very bloody conflict. But this Civil War changed America drastically. And I want to try to, in this program tonight, to stress that as much as the problems we have today, as much as the difficulties that we deal with and the sacrifices that people made, they pale in comparison to the enormous suffering of Americans during that Civil War, especially in the South. The South was ruined and devastated by that war. It's the closest that Americans have come to what war really means in the way that Europeans or the Japanese or Iraqis have suffered war, because we haven't been invaded by foreign invaders the way other peoples have. We haven't suffered. We haven't had bombs fall on our from the skies the way the Japanese or Europeans have had. And it's important to keep that in context, especially when people today complain about difficulties or sacrifices. It's important to keep in keep that in some historical perspective. You know, Susie, if there's anything that history does, it should make us humble. It should make us realize that whatever we whatever difficulties we have, they're very, very small compared to the sufferings and sacrifices of so many of our ancestors here in the United States and that what other people have suffered in other countries.
So you're saying this was a war to actually separate, because why? Our Constitution gave states the right to secede?
Well, it depends. Well, the war could have entirely been avoided if Lincoln and the North had said, well, we're going to let the South go. Now, Lincoln believed that upholding the Constitution meant not permitting the South to secede. Now, there were many people in the North that said the South should just be allowed to go. If they want to go, let them go. And there were many people, and many people, of course, in the South expected that after one little battle, the North would realize that the South wasn't going to be forced back in easily, and that they would realize that the price was so high, they would just let the South secede. But Lincoln believed very strongly, many people in the North believed very strongly, that the unity of the United States was important enough to sacrifice many people and to kill many people to make sure it happened. Now, Lincoln, the specific issue that triggered the Civil War was reprovisioning and supplying the federal fort Sumter just outside of Charleston in South Carolina. That was the specific issue. The South wanted the federal fort at the mouth of Charleston Harbor to surrender, and Lincoln said, no, we're not going to allow it to surrender. And he tried to provision it, and the South began shelling the fort, and it surrendered. And that was the first combat of the war. And then Lincoln called up volunteers, and then other southern states seceded after that. Now, the North could have allowed the South to secede, but it would be a very different country. And maybe it would have been the best thing. Certainly no one at the beginning of the war foresaw just how bloody, how terrible the war would be. And that's one of the things about war, I think.
Yeah.
Very few people ever foresee, oftentimes, just how horrible the war will be when it begins. That was true of World War One. It was true of World War Two. It was true of the American Civil War, and particularly the American Civil War.
Yes. Now, I don't know if you can do this, but a couple people have asked you to speak up. I can hear you real good, and probably on the archive, it'll be real good. But, they asked you to speak up. I was going to ask that. Well, go ahead.
One of the big myths about the Civil War is that the war was fought over slavery. That was
correct.
Not the issue. That was not the issue for Northerners. It wasn't the issue for Lincoln. Now, abolishing slavery became a kind of part of the goal of the North as the war went on. But Lincoln said in his inaugural speech and emphasized publicly and in private, he was not fighting the war to end slavery in the South or end slavery altogether. He was fighting to preserve the Union. And now, it's hard to know what would have happened if the South had seceded, whether and successfully set up a separate country, the Confederate States of America, whether how long slavery might have endured. But the war was not fought for that reason, and even after it began, Lincoln was took pains to make clear that he was not fighting the war to abolish slavery in the South.
Well, before we get into the horrors of the war, explain to me why you think, with all of the conventions that they had forming this nation, developing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, all that unity at the beginning, what was preventing in 1860, what was preventing these same intelligent men, and there were a lot of learned men out there, what was preventing them from getting together and saying, let's do this, let's make it one union, but let's do it a little slower, and as time goes on, you know, we can eliminate the slavery, and maybe the blacks can be paid a small pittance, and actually that would have been good for the economy, because as they paid the slaves, then the slaves would have to buy their own food and pay for their own housing. Why couldn't they get together and solve that? What made the mentality of the men back then so hard-headed?
Well, another way to put it is, why couldn't they have reached a compromise? Well, they did reach a compromise for a long time. For a long time, Susie, they did work out various compromises. The Missouri Compromise made an agreement that slavery would not extend in the northern states. There were various compromises that were in place and did work for a while. But this reached a high point in 1858-59 because the South was fearful that with the election of Lincoln, that it meant the inevitable end of slavery. Lincoln had said enough things, and there were enough people in the Republican Party to make the South fearful that slavery would end. Now, Lincoln's plan, and there's a big article about this on our website that I urge you to look at, Lincoln's plan was to buy the slaves and send them out of the United States. Lincoln wanted the blacks out of the United States. He wanted the United States to be a country for white people, not for blacks, either slave or free. That was his plan. The South's plan was to hold on to slavery, but the South insisted, and this was a big sticking point, that slavery should be extended into the new territories, into California, into New Mexico, into Kansas. And Northerners, whatever they felt about slavery, didn't want blacks in the new territories, whether slave or free. A good example of that is my state of Oregon. I'm from Oregon. Mm-hmm. Oregon became a state in 1859, just before the Civil War. And the voters of Oregon voted not only to prevent slavery, they voted not even to allow free blacks to live in the state of Oregon. It was a crime to be a black person in the state of Oregon after it became a state. They didn't want blacks free or slave. And this was a big sticking point because the South wanted the extension of slavery, and this is where compromise became impossible. Even people who were willing to see the continuation of slavery didn't want it. And so this was the area, these were the issues that were impossible to compromise. It was impossible to compromise over the question of whether slavery should be extended into the territories. The South said it should. The Northerners Union said no, and the South also feared that slavery would end. And it wasn't so much that they were fearful of the end of slavery; they were fearful that if the slaves were free, the white population would be overwhelmed by the black population of the South.
But that never happened, even today.
Well, I would dare say in some places it has happened. Detroit is now completely run by the black population. The whites have simply fled. Large parts of the South, whites simply flee. That's what Atlanta is now, a black-run city, and whites have, by and large, simply left areas that are controlled politically by the black population. So in many areas, that, in fact, is what has happened. And across the United States, not only with the black population, but also with Mexican population, whites have, as it were, voted with their feet by just moving out of areas that become for them alien, become for them uncomfortable to live in.
Okay, now let's set it up. The North was producing what? The South was producing what? And what was the North and the South like before the Civil War started?
Well, one of the big problems was that the South had much less population than the North. The North was rapidly, was an enormous center of rapidly developing industry. Many immigrants were coming from Europe into the North. The North had already much, much larger population. But remember, in the Senate, each state had the same number of senators. So the South had a kind of parity with the North in the Senate, even though in the House of Representatives, which was based on population, the North was already overwhelming. That's why once Lincoln decided to go to war to bring the South back in, it's very difficult to see how the Confederacy could have succeeded, because the North had such an enormous advantage in population, in industry, and so forth. It's remarkable that the South held on as long as it did, given the enormous power and population and financial and industry advantage of the North.
So the North was industrial and the South was agricultural.
Right, right. I mean, the North had many more tons, the railroad mileage, many more factories, many more shipyards, much more, and produced more even. But the North, even though the South was largely agricultural, agriculture was even bigger in the North. It's just that the South, agriculture was a larger portion of the economy. But even the agriculture of the North was produced much more than the South.
Okay, we have a caller, Mark. If you don't mind, we'll take this guy from Texas, and let's see if we can get him in here. Texas, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Texas, you want to introduce yourself and ask Mark Weber a question or a comment?
I'm just listening. Jeff from Texas.
Jeff from Texas?
I'll just listen. I'll
request. Well, sir, are your sympathies, do you have sympathies with the Confederacy or with the Union?
Union, and I can't understand why these people keep on saying, you know, they're proud of the South, you know. You gosh darn Yankee, you know, because I'm originally a Yankee, and I can't understand. You know, I think, I'm pretty sure the South, they, like, lost.
Yes. Sir, where are you originally from?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin? Okay.
Right.
So you don't have any feelings whether who should have won?
I think it's pretty obvious who won.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. No. All right. Well,
okay, I'm going to put you back on mute. Go ahead.
Okay, I think another point to be made, too, and this is a point I'm going to be talking about at a meeting we're having that's coming up. In the greatest crisis America faced, which was the Civil War, the Constitution failed. This is a very important point for those people who think that the Constitution is an almost magical or sacred document. In the Civil War period, Lincoln suspended key provisions of the Constitution to preserve the Union. He set aside the guarantee of freedom of speech. He set aside the constitutional guarantee of habeas corpus. Lincoln had people arrested and newspapers shut down merely for expressing views that he thought were going to be harmful to the war effort. Lincoln had people arrested and put in prison without any formal charges because he felt that impeded the war effort. In order to preserve the Union, Lincoln was willing to violate the Constitution. This is a very important point for those people to think that if only the Constitution were applied, that would be the right way of solving the problem. It proved impossible to deal with this problem through a peaceful upholding of the Constitution.
Well, that's scary because, well, we know that, well, I don't know if President Wilson put people in jail, but I know he collected people if he thought they were traitors against World War I. But isn't that what we have today? I mean, we have a president that's threatening to enforce martial law and put people in jail if they dare go against what he wants to do with the United States?
No, it's nothing compared to what Lincoln did during the Civil War. For example, a prominent congressman from Ohio, Vallandigham, he urged that the Union should just let the South secede. Lincoln had him arrested and signed into the Confederacy. In effect, just expelled him from the country for expressing the view that the war was pointless and that the South should be allowed to go. That's so far, no American president since then has dared to arrest and expel a U.S. congressman, for example. It'd be as if Barack Obama was to arrest Ron Paul and send him to the Taliban in Afghanistan, something like that. So far, no president in the lifetime of ourselves and our listeners has shut down a newspaper or a website or anything because it says that the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan is wrong and illegal and we should bring the troops home. But remember, back in those days, the issues were far greater because people were being conscripted to serve in the Union Army, and there was immense opposition to this. There were riots, I mean, bloody, violent riots in New York and Baltimore against conscription that took many, many lives and destroyed property. This was, what happened in the Civil War should make people much more aware of what countries and what governments will do when they're facing really existential problems, really basic fundamental problems like as came up during the American Civil War.
Are we anywhere near that today?
I don't think we're near that. I think when we see parallels in history, what we see is something very, very different, because as much as Americans might have disagreed about things, they felt very passionately and were willing to sacrifice to do it. To give an example, if today Hawaii, the people of Hawaii said, we want out of the United States, we want to be a separate country, I can't believe that any American president or the American people would be willing to kill people to force Hawaii to stay in the United States. But at that time, Lincoln felt that preserving the unity of the United States was important enough to kill people, to make them do it. If the people of Alaska said, we're sick of being in under the control of Washington, we want to be a separate country, it's hard to believe that people would be killed and rounded up and put to death, and Americans would go to war to keep Alaska in the United States, for example.
Well, I know some people from Alaska have actually talked about succeeding. So.
A lot of people do talk about it, yeah. They talk about not only Alaska, but there's a secessionist movement in Vermont and New Hampshire, in Alaska, and there's a large number of people in Hawaii that wishes Hawaii was a kingdom again, a separate country.
I just find that amazing. I don't think the United States would allow that. I mean, look how much possessions we have. We're over there in Iraq, for goodness sakes.
Well, I think though, Susie, there's just much less unity in this country. We're willing to kill foreigners, but it's hard to imagine that there would be any support for killing people in Alaska to force them to stay in the United States. It's hard to believe.
Okay, now we talked about, this is an extremely sad war. I'm going to play one of the songs. It's called Lorena. Now, let me ask you, because you like this song, is Lorena a piece of land or is it a woman?
It's a woman.
It's a woman.
Song, it's a lament about a man who misses Lorena.
Okay.
This woman.
All right, let's play that very quickly. Here we go.
The years creep slowly by the window. The snow is on the grass again. The sun down the sky, the rain, the frost means where the flies have been. But the heart throbs on as warmly now as when the summer days were nigh. Oh, the sun never dip so low. A down affection's cloud the sky. Oh, the sun can never dip so low. A down affection's cloud the sky. We love each other than the rain, more than we ever dared to tell. And what we might have been the rain had but our lovings prospered well. But then just past years have gone, and I'll not call up their shadowy forms. I'll say that lost years sleep on. Sleep on, nor heed life's pelting storm. I'll say.
All right, that is Lorena. Let me...
Susie,
yes.
It's important to realize that that song is played much more quickly at a much faster pace than it was played at the time of the Civil War. At the time of the Civil War, it was played much more slowly, and the tune was much more plaintive. This song was so moving and so popular on both the North and the South that many officers forbid it to be played, because when it was played, it made many men so homesick that they wanted to desert. Remember, it's important to remember, in the South, when the war began in 1861, many young men rushed off to volunteer for a war that they thought would be over very quickly. Mm-hmm. After they came to the front lines, and after the first battles were fought, the Southern Confederate Congress passed a law requiring that everybody who was in the Confederate Army had to stay in until the end of the war. That's four more years of fighting. Remember, this was a very great sacrifice in those days, because these young men were fathers, sons, and brothers who had to leave their wives, their mothers, and so forth at home to run farms and shops and so forth. A great sacrifice for their families. And for 4 years, they're involved in, and they're forced to be in this war in which, day after day, the average soldier sleeps every night on the ground. It means dealing with horrible humidity in the summer. It means with freezing cold often in the winter. These are far, far greater sacrifices than people are used to making today.
Yes.
And Lorena, especially this. This, what you just played, is a lot more zippy and quick-paced than just how sorrowful the song was when it was played and sung by men during the Civil War.
You know, maybe the reason that they did record it a little jazzier was because it is a sad song. I mean, it could give you chills if it was really slow, like a dirge. Now, there's another song, Mark. It's called Just Before the Battle, Mother. And I'll play that real quick, just about a minute of it. Here goes.
Just before the battle, Mother, I am thinking most of you. While upon the fields we're watching, with the enemy in view, comrades brave around me lying, filled with thoughts of home and God.
Okay, that's another sad song from the Civil Era. Yes.
And that recording captures a little more of the sorrowfulness and the wistfulness of the music. Which, remember, these are these are young men who are torn away for long, long periods of time from their wives, their girlfriends, their mothers, their children. This is subjected to great sacrifices and death and wounds and so forth.
Mm.
These are tremendous sacrifices. But remember, especially in the South, there was a very, very high level of idealism that is difficult for Americans today to really understand, because in our society we put so much emphasis on immediate personal comfort and happiness and gratification.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I went through my Civil War book, John Brown came from the North, and his job, as were other people's, was to cause havoc in the South, and he did, and eventually he was hung. And they have a song about John Brown's raid, or actually John Brown's body. So let me play it real quick. I don't think I hear it. Did you hear anything, Mark?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, that could be a bad sign. That could be that we have no music, and if we have no music, there's a possibility I could be bumped. So let's not play any more songs for a while. But we have a caller that wants to talk to you about what he thinks is another cause between the war between the states. Do you want to talk to him first?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, hold on. This is Mike from Michigan, I believe. Mike, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
go
ahead.
Okay. I want to, you know, you're talking around two issues, the excuse to go to war and the cause of the war. The excuse, in my mind, was obviously basically this mock heroic idea that we had to eliminate slavery. But I want to suggest something that might be the real cause. And here's what I think the real cause is. I think that the Jewish community at the time of the Civil War primarily owned cotton mills in the North, and they were manufacturing clothes. And I think that the Southern farmers were all whites and Christians, and I think that they had two markets for their raw cotton. One would be to the Jews living up in the North, and the other would be to the cotton mills and clothing factories in England. And it seems to me during the Civil War at one point there was some kind of a blockade so that the Southern people couldn't send ships to England and back and forth and so forth. But I don't think that had anything to do with whiskey. I think basically the Jews in the North dictated to Lincoln that the Southerners were not going to be able to sell their cotton crops to England, that they could only sell them to the factories up in the North, which obviously would depress the price of raw cotton. So that's my question to Mr. Weber. If he thinks about this for a minute, like I said, it seems to me that there is a lot of factual evidence about blockades being carried out during the war. Maybe the real reason for the blockade was that the Jews didn't want to allow Northerners, they didn't want to allow the Southerners the chance to sell their cotton crop to the English. So I'll just hang up now. You guys can just run with that idea.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Well, the South made I don't think that was really a factor. When the South seceded, they hoped and expected to get recognition and support for their government, their new government, from England and France, especially from Britain, which depended or imported a lot of cotton from the South. But the South did something that, in retrospect, was pretty foolish. They actually withheld shipment of cotton to England and France with the expectation that England and France would then recognize the Confederacy because they would be hurt by not having any cotton to import. This did not happen. And it was actually foolish. The South should have tried to sell cotton immediately to the North. But actually, just the opposite happened. They tried to withhold cotton as a way of forcing or pressuring Britain to try to give a diplomatic recognition to the Confederacy, which they never did. The South was never recognized as an independent country by any other foreign government, and that was a big blow diplomatically and ultimately in other ways for the Confederacy. But the blockade of the South was carried out by the Union to try to strangle the South and to keep it from importing what it needed to fight the war, because the South had almost no manufacturing ability. It had to depend very much on weapons imported to the country or captured from the North, because the South had very little in the way of manufacturing compared to the North. But anyway, as far as the Jewish issue was concerned, that was not much of an issue at the time. People did not think of it in the same way they did today, because the Jewish population was very small. One of the ironies is that the first Jewish members of a U.S. cabinet of a high-level position in America was in the Confederacy. Judah Benjamin was Secretary of Treasury and then Secretary of State, and I think Secretary of War in the Confederate cabinet. He was Jewish. Up until that time, there was no Jewish member of a cabinet, North or South. And anyway, the first member of a cabinet, high-level cabinet position in an American government, ironically, was in the Confederate States of America. Mm. At that time, the Jewish question was not a big issue, because Jews had not yet gained anything like the role in society financially, economically, and politically that they did during the 20th century.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Mark. Things were getting serious. They were fighting these wars in people's backyards. I don't know where the people in the houses went. I assume they left. But they were fighting these wars in fields. And it looks to me like they set up their perimeters. They were very polite about